welcome to the first episode of the Lauren Has Friends podcast. My name is Lauren Kozlowski. I'm a former radio guy, a comic book fan, a Jay-Z stan, and a Statham head. I'm multifaceted. Each week, I'll talk to a friend of mine about the projects they're working on, the subjects that ignite their passions, and how we're such good friends. And at some point, I might even expand this to enemies, because I believe there is an untapped market for podcasts where people confront one another about long festering grievances and slights. But until then, I'll have on friends, and we'll be friendly, and more than likely just say nice things to one another. But then we'll probably get real. So either way, drama, kids. Plan on it. To kick off this inaugural show, I invited my friend Tony Griffin on to talk about his work in independent film in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and his brand new short film, The Girl with Blue Eyes, that will be featured in the Project 21 Film Festival October 1st in Philadelphia. Here's our chat. Hi, Griffin.
Hello, Mr. Lauren. How you doing, sir?
Doing well. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. And I want to say, right starting out, that I enjoy your work in general.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you for watching.
Absolutely. So to start off, for people who don't know who you are and what you do and how you make the world a better place, what is it that you do?
I am a filmmaker here in Michigan, and I make films. So I really don't contribute much to the global economic standard as far as money, but definitely to some degree the creative, throw my drop into the pond, if you will.
You make art, sir.
Yes.
Yes.
I get paid to make art.
Yes. So you are.
No, I don't.
No, that's right. No. Yes.
I'm an artist. I don't get paid to do anything.
Absolutely. So tell me about, is this your fourth year in Project 21?
This would be our fifth year.
This is our fifth year
for Project 21. This is our last film for them, actually.
Last year for Project 21. Now, for people who don't know what Project 21 is, that is a film festival based in Philadelphia.
That is correct. It's an international film festival. It started about 6 years ago by Matt Conant, Stephanie Uhas, and another co-founder. I'm sorry, his name escapes me at the moment. My apologies. They started the festival up, and initially the first year they had 21 teens from around the world compete. And I found them on MySpace. You had 3 weeks to make the best film you could that was 10 minutes or less based on a common element. And the first year that we competed in 2006, the element was 21. And progressively since then, they've moved away from nouns into, phrases. Last year's was Between the Lines, and then this year's festival was a phrase starts with a crash. We're allowed to, as artistes, as auteurs, we're allowed to go ahead and interpret that as we see fit. And usually those last couple years I've considered, if in a way, no disrespect to them, as non-elements, because what am I supposed to do with that? So I usually just attach it to the theme or the thematic in the work that we're doing as a team and go from there.
Yes. I remember going when I went to Project 21 last year, which was my first year going, and yeah. I didn't see all the films, but I was surprised by since the theme was Between the Lines, I was surprised by a lack of cocaine-based films. I thought that would have been like a no-duh. Like, hey, we can finally work the cocaine in. To Project
there was 20. One. There was one. There was I believe one. It was called K, where it was about a hitman. Interestingly enough, who does rails off the bathroom counter in front of the mirror before he goes in and kills everyone. I believe best cinematography.
That sounds great.
Yeah,
I wish I'd seen that one. That sounds good.
Oh, it's terrific. I'm sure it's online at this point.
I'm sure.
And well, you don't believe it or not, I don't want to shill their product, but I should shill their product. It's probably because it wasn't an award winner. It'll be on their DVDs.
Plug.
Do it. Shill. Plug. Buy it. Go. I mean, they really are interesting. You know, in all seriousness, buying those films and looking to see what people did in 3 weeks is inspiring. Watching all those films, and I've had the pleasure of watching every single one of those Project 21 films, some of them several times, to kind of figure out how exactly did they do that?
Yeah.
How is that even possible? So this year, what we did for, the segue into our film, I wanted to create a film that would inspire the same people that have come after us, if I may be so bold to kind of say, how did they do that? How is it even possible to do that in 3 weeks? And I can tell you right now, I'm glad it's our last year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Why is there any particular reason why it's the last year? You know, you feel like this one's the bomb, and you're just going out, drop the mic, we're done, Project 21. You're never going to top this. You might as well shut down your festival, go with the blue eyes, smoke some all.
No, no, I felt like it was time. I've said what I can say with these types of films made in 3 weeks. I've made other films or attempted to make films using the same model and standard, and they have just chewed me up. Competition films are fantastic, a way to learn about not just the craft, but also really how to work with people and how to figure out how to make that structure very quick and efficient. As we said in this one, I want it to be efficient, not fast. And I think we really kind of pegged it this time around. Everybody's work on this is 110% top notch. And I'm really proud of them, you know, not just the leader of this team, but to be a part of this team working with everybody in it. It was quite an experience.
I have to say, this is probably my favorite thing you've done.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. You know, I've told people, like, what's this new podcast going to be like? I said, I'm just going to go and give oral hand jobs. I'm just going to really just give, yeah, just whack people off.
Because,
have people on me like, hey, you're great. I love you. Come here. How's that feel? Your shoulders feel good? Yes.
They're a little looser. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. But yeah, no, I watched it as I watch all things with a very critical eye. And
which is why I really enjoy your podcast and your critiques on Bad Guys Win. I love those. Those are so cool. If you don't mind me handing back.
I'll take it back. Absolutely.
It is fantastic. I get such a kick out of that. And the music as well, as I'm not as adept or skilled in those kinds of things, but we have very similar taste in those items. Yet there are things that I go, he's wrong. He's wrong. I can't wait.
Oh, I know. All the time. All the time. People want to challenge me. And I'm like, all right, bring it.
Bring it.
But I have to say, this is a gorgeous film. This film looks so good. There are at least, I'd say, like four, considering it's only 10 minutes, there are at least like four shots that are like, oh, that would be in like a major film. That would be like an iconic shot. And you got like four in here. You've got the profile of the younger female assassin staring out at the water.
Yes.
And then Shirley joins her. That's beautiful. Shirley in the – I don't want to spoil things here for everybody. But Shirley in the elevator.
Yes. Yeah,
whoa.
Absolutely.
Like whoa, as the kids would say.
Yeah, that's – thank you. Well, Shirley, for the kids at home, want to know, that's my wife in the film. And it's interesting working with your spouse in these kinds of things. I'm just tremendously impressed and honored to work with her. She has such good ideas and is very patient and has this ability to convey emotion with just very subtle and nuanced. And that's what you really want to try to find when working with actors, is give them as much story as possible and let them generate that feeling of emotion.
Right.
That kind of thing. Sidney Lumet is renowned for saying that, you know, 80%, 90% of a movie is in casting. And when Justin and I were fashioning the script and putting it together, it came together very well because of the people that I had already known, people who had asked to be in the film when I put a call for actors out on my Facebook page at Unsafe Film Office. And I got everybody in except one person. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty well cast. I didn't think there was anybody. I mean, there's only what, four roles, right? I'm
thinking four roles.
I've watched it twice.
You might count the fifth role. And I don't like to talk about that particular scene. It ends up being, we'll just say that there's a fifth role in there that Justin and I get this interesting moment of glee where we call it like kicking the puppy across the room moment, where you get like 10 seconds to create a character and find out if people will associate with them as quickly as possible and again make them vanish. And Justin Mushong being the other co-writer of this film and a good friend of yours as well.
He is a very good friend of mine. He's the best man in my wedding. So there
that's
you
terrific. Congratulations, by
thank
the way.
You. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's really, It's really well constructed, and it moves just very smoothly. I know a common theme in a lot of your films is the, you know, we have your, you know, in this one we have Mike McCallum, yes. For people who don't know.
Michael McCallum.
Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, kind of running this narration, kind of talking, guiding this hit woman in practice, as it were. While
sure.
We have the secondary scene with Shirley attempting a assassination hit.
Yes.
And just kind of running those two together. And I know that's something you've done in the past. I know in the film Lucky, you kind of had something similar to that in one scene. And I know that that hasn't always worked, but in this, it works. It works.
It works.
It works.
Well, in the case of, say, Lucky, which was written and directed by Michael, mm-hmm. We share very similar passion and common themes in our films. We like the same kinds of movies, same kinds of things. It makes it a lot easier when you have someone who is sharp and skilled who can help you tell those stories. In this particular one, I asked him to come on as an actor because he's always very good at being able to make those characters live and breathe by just the nuance and subtlety. The opening scene with him, for instance, has been recognized by other people. It's just pitch perfect.
Yes.
And I'm really proud to just kind of like, wow, he nailed it with and helped set the tone of the movie. And I believe it really kind of sets off that back and forth pacing. The music as well by Todd Chappelle of The Ideal Setback was something that had always been in my mind's eye as part of the movie. And that helped, you know, using the sound as a way to bridge gaps. I usually use that a lot in a lot of the films that I make, is sound is a very important component for me to shift, I guess, allegiances and mood back and forth between the A and B storyline.
I know in the film you did last year for Project 21,
yes.
All the Highs and None of the Lows, the
yes.
editing and sound in the last 1 minute or so
yes.
just grabs you. It
yeah.
takes you there on an emotional journey, and then you just slam that title card at us, like in your face, in your face. If you haven't seen All the Highs and All the Lows, definitely something that everyone should seek out. Yes, that was my favorite of yours until I saw Girl with the Blue Eyes. I'm just gonna say that. I say one of my favorite things about Girl with the Blue Eyes, though, is along with the great look of it, is that it. I know you're shooting, like, you don't have sets. You know, it's all location, where you can
right.
use. And it all feels, it doesn't feel like, oh, you know, this is my dad's backyard or whatever. Like, this feels like this
right.
natural, real place. I mean, where you shot the opening scene in the sort of open room facing the street, that's a great look.
Yeah, that was courtesy of Fulvu Productions, their studios here in town. Part of their building is vacant at the time, and I initially asked them if I could have three nights in one Sunday afternoon, and I ended up shooting in there six nights oh. in a row from basically 7 o'clock at night till 2 or 3 in the morning, shooting action sequences and scenes, which I think Walter Hill called those the most tedious part of the job, is just shooting the same type of moment over and over and over, because the timing has to be right.
Right.
And I discovered that pretty quickly, that by 2 in the morning, people get pretty cranky, pretty tired. And I was like, well, let's call this a night. The one particular stunt in the movie with the prop, the first night we just could not make that happen without the stunt person getting injured. So we're like, well, I guess I'm going to have to figure out a different way to do it. And then they came back the next night, nailed it in the first take.
No.
So it's just a matter of learning that and being cognizant of the time, but not putting people over the product, you know, quote unquote, the product in it. It's still a film, but at the end of it, it's still the people and how they're living their life in that moment and us all working together. And I'm really proud of this movie that we were all able to do that, working together to make this what it is. The sum of the parts help make this the greater whole. And I'm really proud of everyone's work in this tremendously. I'm interested to see the reactions, much like you had said last year about All the Highs and the Lows. You could tell the audience was getting wound up in that last
yeah.
60 to 90 seconds. And that by the end of it, I think one of the best moments I had in that was Justin looking at me going, "You motherfucker, you did it." Because he didn't like it on paper. He thought it was too melodramatic and too Lifetime. movie channel, which, by the way, Lifetime, feel free to hire me. I'll be happy to work with you on any project. Justin, of course, being a fantastic screenwriter, he's very giving and practically egoless. He can sit there and go, well, I don't like it, but show me why it'll work. And working with Justin is just a great pleasure. And working with him, I really want his involvement in this last one, because he's worked on, I think, three or four of them with me at this point. It was necessary. It was necessary for us all to give our swan song, you know, tip of the hat and walk out the door.
Yeah. Now, with collaborating with him, I talked to him the other night and I said, you know, how much of this is you and how much is Griffin? Be honest. And he's like, well, I wrote a thing and I sent it to Griffin and he rewrote the whole thing. And then he sent it to me and then I rewrote that whole thing. And then finally we ran out of time. And I said, I'm glad that it was, there was no compromise. It was just, oh, well, shit, we're out of time.
Yeah.
Use my version, i.e. the best version.
Well, and it's interesting because I've done some other films of Justin's, and a lot of times he's, honestly, I'll come out there with some global ideas or mood or feeling. I laid out the whole story for him on the phone, and I could hear him making notes, scribbling furiously. And he's like, wait a minute. I go, well, you know, it's kind of like this is going to evolve into this moment. And his, I know when I'm getting on his nerves, he'll start screaming, I know how to do this. I'm like, okay, yeah. And then literally he can take that melody that's kind of happening in my mind and create a structure for it to lay against. And I'm like, that's it. That is it. So when I saw the framework, I could go from there and say, okay, I'm going to move these notes around. These images that are sitting there parked in my mind, I can put this here. I never consider that, Justin. That's brilliant. This, you get one, you get this scene or the other scene. And we just kind of took turns trying to figure out which way they'd work. It was the kind of thing with these short films. We try to cram a feature, if you will, into 10 minutes. And there are moments when we were shooting this, I realized, thinking, man, I would love to have this moment, but this is for the feature.
Right.
Which subsequently he's written a treatment for. So he's written a treatment for most of the films that we've done for Project 21 that he's written full-length features for them already. Red 7, I believe, has got one. The Tumblr stories have one. This one, Girl with Blue Eyes, has one now as well.
I have to say, this one has the most – like, this one feels more like this could be like the prologue to something really big, you know?
Yes. Which is how the feature starts out. It kind of takes a couple moments out of this, but then it expands the universe as to what the secret is of the Blue Eye Girls and why they share this common bond and who they are. Of course, in the short film, it would be, you know, fun to give that away, but all the actors and everybody was aware of what the backstory was. And the thing that I told them was, like, we will never tell anybody what this is. We'll make them pay us to tell us what
there
this
you go.
Really means.
Yeah. Put some money in my hand.
That's right. Please do.
So you were saying earlier, like, this is the last Project 21, because you said that, you know, while there are things to be gained from having length restrictions and thematic restrictions, you're kind of over that a bit.
Well, I think that artists need limitations. I believe that's something Orson Welles had said, something to that effect, if I may, you know, don't appreciative of Mr. Welles. Those are the kinds of things that I don't feel ever go away, particularly when you're working on a true independent level like we are. This is, of course, the most I've ever spent on a Project 21. I've usually kept it under the $500 range. And this one I probably spent around $1,500 for it. And I think that it all appears on camera.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then some. The idea is that, well, Shane Carruth said this, the guy who did Primer, he goes, composition is free. Whether it's writing, sound, visuals, you can get those kinds of looks. It just takes the time. And we all have the equal amount of time when we get up every day. We all get 24 hours to do it in. Some people just have the luxury of getting paid to use their time to make those kinds of things. And in some cases, it gets in the way. If you have an unlimited budget and you have those resources available to you, kudos. You know, my hat's off to anyone who can muster that and put it together. But personally, I would rather spend my time making another movie instead of creating a crowdfunding site or chasing people down and you know, being a huckster and say, give me money. I'd rather just show them what I can do and perhaps it'll evolve into that. But if not, it's no, no skin off my back. I can just go ahead and make another movie, because that's really what we do is, as filmmakers, you make films. You don't make talk about making films.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I have to say, getting more into specifics again about Girl with Blue Eyes, the stunt work in this movie.
Yes.
Blowing me away. Blowing me away. Like you said, you know, I'm like, okay, this is stuff he's, you know, they've got 21 days to film this. They're filming it with, you know, people who don't really kill people, but they are convincingly making this look like all these people are getting beaten, killed.
Yes.
And especially it's not a huge spoiler, but there's an extended fight scene where Shirley fights this man. And I remember I called Justin, I said, Shirley is bringing the fucking heat in this movie. She is laying this guy out. And Justin's like, well, you know, it's not all Shirley there.
No,
and I'm like, Shirley had a stunt double?
She did.
Wow.
In fact, believe it or not, the two people that do the stunts in this are Jeremy Wiersma and Stephanie DeCarmine. You may not know from watching the film, unless I obviously told you, but Stephanie, who plays Shirley's stunt double in this, had less than 3 weeks of training. She is we're allowed to talk about the story that we want to pursue before we do filming. And in subsequent years, I've only ever done the film exactly in the 21 days from the conception idea to the end. Mm-hmm. And what I started to notice is that if I needed to bring up the game a little bit, I needed to start figuring out. But last year almost got burned on all the highs and the lows because I had some actresses turn me down for roles. I'm not entirely sure why, but I'm sure after they saw how well it turned out, they're like, I wish I had kind of
Griffin, it's me. So, let me in. It's your actor friend.
It actually happens more frequently than you might think, but it helps me kind of keep a, you know, it's probably the one thing I do keep a scorecard on. It's like, oh, you turned me down. Well, that opportunity will probably never come your way again. Mm. So there's no loss in the world for people who want to be in front of the camera.
Duly and noted, if I ever am asked to be in one of your films and I'm like, I can't, I have to take Simon's poop bag out. You're like, that's too bad.
I'll put Simon in the movie. But I like to find and work with people and collaborate with them who come with me with an idea and say, I have this idea. Can we work together on it? And sometimes it evolves into a film, and sometimes it just part ways and go, you know, you had your idea and I had mine, and we move on smartly. It's the ones that will approach me and say, I want to work with you because you'll get me an award. You'll further my career. And all too frequently, those are the ones that what kind of pressure is that? That is freaky bad news for me because they are completely undirectable. It's impossible to get a performance from somebody who already has that their sights set on their own ego being the number one reason they're doing it. I will not cater to that. So go back to what you were saying about the stunts, you know, trying to terrible segue to go back. Mr. Carmine, who does the stunts in this, is an athletic person. I had worked with Jeremy for many years trying to get other movies off the ground, and because of time, because of shortcomings and funds and money, we had a lot of practice already in different things that we shot. We have very similar taste in martial arts styles, the way we want to talk about how it's shooting. He's very exacting, and also having some training in martial arts myself, I can see what will work on camera, and that's why we worked well together. All those years of failed projects, I think, helped lead to the success of this one, so that once we got the script done, we got the element, was able to formalize the script and put it together very quickly. Jeremy knew exactly what I was thinking when he read the script. He goes, you want this kind of work? I'm like, yes, please. And within a matter of days, him and Stephanie had created four or five action sequences in it that were just, you know, in a way, a type of ballet. One of the reviewers noted it as being kind of glossy, and in a way I think it needed to be in order to, you know, no one would critique Baryshnikov, if I may be so bold to say, oh, White Knights and his dancing with Gregory Hines is so choreographed. It's like,
you know,
yeah,
I think
shit.
They planned this
no
out.
Shit. No shit. It was planned out. What a surprise.
I mean, I think there's definitely something to be said for fight scenes where it looks like, oh, that's what would really happen in a fight. Like three punches and it's kind of awkward. And, you know, if that's what you're going for. But I think with this one, you kind of need it to be glossy. It needs to have that action film sheen, you know? Right. I mean, you're not making a documentary slice of life found footage film here. You're making a thriller.
Right. And using those slow gliding camera movements was imperative to attaching the cliche to the story, because it helped sublimate and, you know, in some ways elevate it, because people like, oh, I've seen this. I understand what this is happening in the story, and it helps save me the time of using exposition, which I can't stand. I hate extra words in people's mouths. Like, you want to watch that? Watch what the machine gives you. And quite frankly, watching some actors pull off exposition is amazing. Watching like Travolta do it, or Tom Cruise, or anybody who has to basically plot dump over 2 or 3 minutes and see how they're able to make that happen is amazing, amazing stuff. And a lot of times they get nailed on and go, oh, the crappy acting. It's like, no, it could be just crappy writing.
All right. So I wrote this down. I did take notes when I was watching the movie. And one of them I wrote was, Shirley delivers an intense performance. Girl got range.
Just the capability that she has to be able to muster a range of emotions and carry it forth with such sincerity it always constantly surprises and amazes me when I watch her on the other side of the camera, because while I'm camera operating, I get very technical. I need to kind of be very focused on what's happening in the frame lines and what's going on behind it, and then listening intently to see if I'm hearing the right intonations. But during playback, it's marvelous to watch someone you love so dearly express themselves with their ability and talent in such a interesting and unique way. You see it and you kind of go, wow, I'm very blessed and very fortunate to be married to such a wonderful woman.
Is she method? When you guys went home, did you be like, don't kill me tonight?
We've had plenty of jokes like that where I'm like, what kind of eggs do you want? I'm like, just don't kill me. You know, she'll make jokes about like skulking about in the middle of the night, want to bump into her, she'll break my neck. You have to be careful around her. I mean, I'm no joy to hang around with when I'm making a movie. I'm very focused and intent. Certainly in that 3 weeks, it was very pressure driven. The cold, greasy sweats every morning going, how am I going to get this done in time? And just very able, not method at all, just able to really kind of say, what do you need right now? What are you thinking right now? And listening, and just being a joy to kind of like, she developed her own backstory for this character that was better than anything that, you know, I'm sure Justin or I could have come up with, that lend so much layers to this character that I thought, man, I don't know how these things happen, but when they do happen, it adds that much more to the story. It's what I mean by saying just to some of the parts, what they are, but the whole, everybody's contribution to this movie is a real blessing. It was something else to watch all of them work as individuals and then in tandem and basically challenge each other to raise their games. It was, you know, being there right now and thinking about it, I'm like, I was in the room when this happened. This is incredible. I'm like, wait a minute. I was a part of this. So it's kind of an odd sensation, to be honest with you. As it gets further along, what happens, you know, having made a number of these movies, what happens is you start kind of realizing that you as a person have changed and evolved or devolved in some cases. But the person you were making that movie is who you were in the time in which you made it. And it becomes like a snapshot, recording of it. Even though none of that stuff is in front of the camera, you had these feelings that were behind the camera. So watching this film now, I still see moments where I'm like, how the hell did we pull that off? Or how did that happen? And it's only been about 6 weeks now, and that's probably the fastest it's ever happened to me, where I'm sitting there going, I don't know how this movie came about, but watching this occur now, it's really something I'm proud everyone's working it. I don't have a better segue back around to what your original question, but you know, I'm really proud to be working with my wife in these types of projects, not just with the movies, but also with their film festival, Thriller Chiller, her PR company, Twain Girl. It's just really marvelous to work with someone with so much talent and potential, and they're able to express themselves in such a distinct and direct way. Just that right there alone is a joy and happiness.
So this year, I know it's only September. What's been the top film you've seen this year?
Summer Wars by Funimation. It was last year. Funimation is the American distribution company. Forgive me for not knowing the Japanese directors and the people who made it. It's the story. It's basically a very Japanese story of a family coming to terms with one of the things, one of the life transitions of one of the members, and all married up against a ticking time bomb of a Facebook site essentially going global and using this killer satellite to kill everybody. The time on this clock starts ticking. It is impressive. That is one amazing
movie. That is an amazing synopsis you've just given me of a film. I need to see this movie.
And then talk about the AB storyline in that. It had me cheering. And it's an animation. It's one of the things where I'm like, wow, I'm actually being emotionally affected in both joy and sorrow and everything within just moments. And I'm watching this animation go on. It won, I guess, Japan's equivalent of their Oscar for best animation last year. And it was released earlier this year by Funimation here in the United States. They're the same people that also released like Samurai Champloo. And it's God, that movie is so damn good. You got to see it. It's called Summer Wars.
All right. All right, I'll check that out. And what's the worst thing you've seen this year? Obviously, everything you can learn from, but there's still got to be something that you were like, what I learned is never watch this again.
Oh, God, that is a that's a tough question. I think I watched here you go. Live Like a Man, Die Like a Cop. Or Live Like a Cop, Die Like a Man or something. It's an Italian exploitation film from the 70s.
The title's great.
Yeah, it's the thing about it. You watch it, you go, you got to be shitting me. Didato directed it. So you end up kind of going, what in the hell? But the thing that is always amazing to me is that the Italians know camera work. They know framing and composition and how to get the most out of the least interesting looking backgrounds. You can learn something from by watching any 70s exploitation film, from Fulci to Deodato to Argento. They are absolutely craftsmen, technically. They're absolutely amazing. I would tell anyone to watch anything that's made by Italian if you want to know how to use a camera.
I can't remember now. It was Who Can Kill a Child? Was that Italian?
Was it like a duckling or something like that? Or
I don't know. I watched that one recently. And
that one I would probably stay away from. I know the one. I think I know the one you're talking about, but
that was really good. Kind of, I was impressed with that one. Just with the any movie with that many headshots on children, I'm going to be a little bit impressed. You know what I mean? Everyone always likes to cite
when you're talking about just like violence in movies, you'd probably be surprised. I'm not a big fan of excessive violence in films, although I'm not. I think that it's, you know, torture porn and the over glorification and just the debasement of people in general with that is like, you can come with more creative things than what the Nazis did. All right, you can be that kind of sick in the head to put it on camera. You need to figure out a way to tell better stories. Those probably are the types of films I can tell you that I absolutely despise and won't watch.
Did you see Fast Five?
I need to see Fast Five.
You do.
I love
because
that.
The Rock, he delivers some violence in that film, and I believe that I think you will justify. You'll be like, you know what? Shoot that guy in the head.
Yeah,
the
Rock. He's like the Hulk in that movie. He doesn't like run through buildings and jump over cars.
Correct.
Like, one bound and stuff.
All
like
of those things. He gets the only F word in the movie. Because who else are you going to give it to? Paul Walker? Come on.
No, please.
And no. And it's the movie I like to bring up with all people at any time. I'm probably going to make it a theme on this podcast. We'll be talking about something like, you know, like, tell me about what happened when your mother died. Also, did she see Fast Five before she passed? You know, that'll be the thing we'll do on this podcast.
I know what I meant to ask you. Have you seen the Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance trailer?
Yes. Yeah. I have. It's my desktop. It's my desktop image is Ghost Rider.
I can't wait to watch that movie.
How excited can you be for a thing? I am that excited for Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. And it's funny is that I saw people at work there, like, the last one was terrible. I said, yes.
Oh, it was awful.
It was. But Neville Dean and Taylor are here to make things better, which is what they always do.
Don't hex, right? I mean, you can tell they got savaged on that.
Well, have you ever read the treatment or like what their treatment was? Like how much they changed from the original Neville Dean Taylor script?
Those are always fascinating. Those kinds of movies I love watching because you go, wait a minute, this movie is 82 minutes long. You know there was like a six-hour version of this movie that explained.
I thought the most interesting was Megan Fox. Her character was supposed to have her face like burned off like halfway through the movie.
Okay.
And I said, that sounds interesting. I would see that movie. But it was changed. And they got a PG-13, and I didn't see it. So,
and to kind of sort of not make your money back, why push the envelope, right? Especially Neville Dean and Taylor. I mean, you know what you're getting when you hire them. You should just let them do what they're great at.
Yeah, well, I always think with them when people like...
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, when they people say like, oh, they're pushing the envelope. I'm like, they got the envelope. They threw it away. They don't even push it. They're like, fuck the envelope. We don't need it.
Yeah, set fire to it and run away. It's the type of thing where it's like people will tell me, you know, like, you've raised the bar with this film. And I'm like, no, I just kicked the bar out of the way.
That a boy. Yes.
Just do it. I mean, what's the point of... Especially a short film, they're business cards. I mean, they're marketing pieces for people. If you really want to stand back and look at them and their design and function, a lot of people will use them for that. Personally, I love the fortune cookie style of just how much density can you put into a certain short period of time, making that your limitation. Challenge yourself to tell that type of story in such a limited amount of time is an immense amount of fun. I absolutely love the short form, Matt. And it doesn't really get exploited enough. Mm. People turn it into, you know, decoration, or look how good this is, or look how good that is. And it's, you're going to spend that much time and energy and that many people, just make the feature.
For sure.
If you only got four or five people, just make the short.
I will say when this screens at Project 21, which I intend to go to, provided nature doesn't stop me or something. I will say it will be everything in my power to not jump up right after the end of Girl with the Blue Eyes and just yell at the rest of the crowd, what you got? You got nothing. You got nothing.
We have a lot of really wonderful fans there. I really enjoy their community a great deal because they all seem really supportive of each other.
Yes.
They are competing. There are several of the teams that collaborate and work together on several of the different teams. And my hat's off to anybody that can just set aside that kind of ego and just say, look, I will do what I can to help you out if I have the time to do it. Time and space, I mean, that's really what it matters to. You only got so much time here in space. Why would you waste your time being upset or angry about it? Just go and work together and have fun. Do as much as you possibly can.
All right.
And it's really the mantra to do it.
Final question. What is next for Griffin?
The next thing that we're doing specifically, doing a short film with Deep End Films called Balloon Cop for a new web series that Ben Wilkie's putting together. Ben Wilkie helped me co-edit Girl with Blue Eyes. It's a comedy series that he wants to release in 2012, working with local filmmakers here in the Grand Rapids area, Grand Rapids, Michigan, as opposed to Missouri. And so,
no confusion.
No confusion, please.
You know, kiss on ass, Missouri.
MI, not MO. So, well, there goes all 10 of your fans out of
Missouri. Oh, Missouri. Yeah, all right. Come on back.
Shooting that while we're shooting the Balloon Cop in another week or so. And then after that, it's obviously Project 21. We're going to that. Several other Michigan-based film festivals. Thriller Chiller, which is a film festival. I found it with Chris Randall and Keith Galinsky. And then Shirley's also our marketing director for it. Chris and I are now the co-directors of Thriller Chiller. And you can find out more at thrillerchiller.com. We're playing Die Hard and Cape Fear as our cult classics this year, as well as just a slew of fantastic films from around the world. It's amazing what people have been able to do with the DSLR revolution with cameras and story. We have a whole block of silent films that, because DSLRs aren't really good at natively recording sound, people invented stories without really sound, just using score for it, and they're incredible. Any one of those films could have easily won the best short film in any of the year, Thriller Chiller, and we have seven of them in a row, eight of them in a row. They're all just silent films with score in them that are very impressive. Incredible. After that, Michael McCallum and I are working on his next feature film that I'm helping him co-write and produce. I'm shooting it. He is directing it and producing it as well, called Buffalo. We're shooting that in March over about a week, week and a half. It's the story of a man trying to track down his estranged son to make amends. And his father, Bill McCallum, is playing the older guy in the film. So it'll be really it's really interesting because we have a whole generation of people who are turning, you know, like every second, some like 10,000 people turning 65, and this really kind of is about those twilight years of people's lives and how they interact and engage with people and the choices they made with their lives.
Okay. So a couple things, basically.
A couple things. I mean, sacrificing Project 21, we certainly want to look at moving into doing our own features with Unsafe Film Office. So I've got several scripts. I've had a couple offers from people on both this side of the state and the other side of the state. One of the scripts in particular that Justin wrote was called the best script that this Detroit producer had ever read. They thought it was like, this is the best Michigan script I've ever read, and it's got to get made. So be that as it may, if it ever comes about, we get funding for it, then we'll make that happen.
All right. Well, remember, as we talked about earlier, you're going to need to work in dancing and abortions into one of these to really
tap into what the
kids want to see.
You know?
I mean, they remade Footloose, so you got your dancing.
True.
And I don't know if there's any abortions in that, though.
Well, maybe we could just sell a few scripts and then, you know, let Neville Dean and Taylor take it and run it. Or maybe even Chris Nolan might be available after Dark Knight Rises. He may be looking for that next special project.
I know he's been talking about, he wants nothing but scripts with abortions in it. So, I mean, that's definitely what he wants.
I swear to God, you're going to have, I hope you take that all out.
It's just going to be called, I Talked to Griffin About Abortion.
Oh, God. It's the worst. It's the world's worst podcast ever. You know what it'll be? It'll be one of. It really will be like a 3-minute podcast.
Yes.
For like 2 hours, and you boiled down to 3 minutes. Like, it really didn't have any substance in it.
Nothing.
It was. It really was nougat and caramel.
All right, sir. Well, to everyone, check out Project. What's the website for Project 21?
Project 21 with the number 1 instead of O-N-E at the end of it. So it's projecttwenty1.com. You can also find out more just by typing that into Facebook. You can also go to our website at unsafefilmoffice.com, you know, rebelpictures.net, twangirl.com, thrillerchiller.com, laurenisthegreatestmanintheworld.com, things like that.
Yeah, a couple of those.
You better buy that quick.
I've got to get on that. Oh, man. Well, thank you, sir. It's been wonderful talking to you.
An honor. Thank you.
And there you have it. One down. I hope you enjoyed this podcast and you want to send it to all of your family and friends. And if you didn't like it, then you can suck it. But get in line. That joke, courtesy of Rachel, my future wife. She's a lovely lady. Might have her on in the future where she can entertain us with more classy one-liners, I'm sure. And if you would like to write the podcast, please send your queries, hopes, and dreams to lauren.kozlowski@gmail.com. If you send me a good one, I might just read it on the podcast, and you will become immortalized forever. So that's it for the show. My name is Lauren Kozlowski. This has been Lauren Has Friends, and I'll talk to you later.